This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hi friends, I'm Tim Whitaker and welcome to the New Evangelicals podcast. The New Evangelicals is an inclusive, Jesus-centered community that holds space for people marginalized by the evangelical church, advocates for accountability in the church, and helps you explore the Christian tradition beyond the basement of evangelical fundamentalism. This podcast is part of that work, so join us as we talk to people from all walks of life, lending their expertise and wisdom to us as we renegotiate our faith and find better paths forward. Hi, friends. Welcome back to a Wednesday episode. I'm going to make this pretty short and sweet. Two things you need to know. First off, this conversation with Billy is really powerful. We talk about her experience with Libs of TikTok. Yep, that's right. Billy was blown up by Libs of TikTok and had death threats against her. We'll get into that in a minute. We also talk about what's going on in the broader culture with trans people who are losing their lives in horrific ways because of the hatred aimed towards them. We talk about Christian nationalism. So this is a really powerful episode. We also talk about disgust theology. Okay, you might not know what that is. Go back to episode 133 where I had Billy and her brother on our podcast. Billy does give kind of a crash course in this episode. I think it will blow your mind and hopefully give you some better language and framework to understand what's happening in our cultural moment and why we're seeing so much hatred towards queer people. The second thing I want to say briefly is that we had an amazing all-team strategy meeting over the weekend. I flew in Adele, our strategist. I had Noah, our podcast producer, come out. And we also brought on a video editor for the next several months to help think about content. There's a lot there. I'll give you an update soon. I don't want to make this intro too long. It was really good, and I am really pumped about the future. This is Project Amplify in motion. Okay, this is your donations at work. Thank you so much for donating to that campaign that we created to help us amplify more credible voices like Billy's, but we are getting some organizational strategy figured out. We're getting some great language put behind these things. You're going to see some changes to the podcast, but I think you're going to like them. Stay tuned for middle of March. We're going to have a whole unveiling that I think will give you clarity on the different types of episodes and content that we're doing that will cross-pollinate between YouTube and podcasts. There's so much to tell you. I will stop ranting on that now. Stay tuned for more. Here's my interview with Billy. So grateful you're here. Talk to you all later on. See ya.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jennifer Bird. I'm a biblical scholar, and long story short, the reason I became a biblical scholar is I had been a very conservative evangelical Christian, and then I had a chance to learn more about the Bible, and it changed everything about the way I engaged the Bible. As an educator at heart, I actually wanted to help others find similar freedom and more loving ways of engaging the Bible. So that's what I do. I'm interested in helping others learn how to engage the Bible without harming themselves or others, basically, put short. And that is at the heart of what I see T&E doing on various levels here, specifically being committed to the values of love, justice, inclusivity, and non-dehumanization. I could not be more excited about the work T&E is doing, and I could not be more supportive of Project Amplify. I hope you will consider joining the movement and helping us make things happen.
Oh, goodness. Friends, good to be with you today on this conversation. Really, we're responding to some stuff. So Billy Horde, a friend of the podcast, a personal friend, we've met now twice in person. Yeah. We were at QCF together, and that was wonderful. You and your brother did a talk on the theology and psychology of disgust. And we actually had you and your brother on a few months ago doing a deep dive on that. I will say that was one of the most like enlightening conversations I had in a long time because it was so helpful, new language. And then we hung out at Content Warning. No, you were not at Content Warning. I was sorry.
We were texting.
We were texting.
I was following you and like everybody else at Content Warning. It was one of those like, I have never had FOMO as badly as I did not being at Content Warning.
I guess because you and I talk on the phone so often now where I'm like, Can I call you and run something by you? My memory has you there because you were there in spirit. So
I was there in spirit. I'll take it. I will take it. Oh, my God.
I love it. Okay, so we have a lot to get into today. We're responding to a lot. There's a lot of things happening around the topic we're going to address. I want to dive into, well, I'll just tell the audience, behind the scenes, what sparked this conversation was, obviously, there have been some cases of trans people, right, who have lost their lives in different ways or have been under threat that have made national news. And so I was talking to you about this and I was like, we should have a conversation around it. But also it ties into bigger issues, things that we're always trying to point out in the general, you know, cultural moment, I guess you can say, when it comes to Christian nationalism and who's in charge, all that stuff. So we're going to get into a lot today, friends. Hang in there with us because there's a lot of ground to cover. Billy, why don't you kind of kick us off? Because I know this was really your idea in the beginning of like, hey, why don't we have a conversation? And I'm like, yes, let's make this happen. So where do you want to start?
Yeah, you sort of, you know, just I got hit. I was just overwhelmed the other day with just like the state of how rough things have been for trans people. And I mean, the last week was a rough week. Ask any trans person. And hopefully you know a trans person, oh, audience out there listening. Like, and if you don't, go meet some. We're awesome. But like, it was a rough week. And I'm going to try to bring a little bit of levity because, my gosh, it was dark. I mean, my therapist got her, she earned her living last week. We had a whole bunch of developing stories. I mean, within the course of like a week and a day, we had breaking news about the death of an 18-year-old. He was 18 or 19-year-old trans guy in South Carolina by the name of Jacob Williamson. He had actually died, I think, 6 months earlier, but the news came out that his murderer was being prosecuted, stabbed him 37 times. And that was, and one of the reasons Jacob was as vulnerable as he was because he had been kicked out of his house for being trans. So these stories pop up periodically, far too frequently, and it was already heavy. And that's the sort of thing that we see it happen. And it's tough. It's tough. And you kind of take a breath, except that the next day we got news about the death of Cecilia Gentile, who was an activist, an actor. She was on Pose, and she was an actor for sex workers' rights, but also an extremely powerful activist for trans rights, especially for the rights of trans people of color. She died. I don't think the causes are known on that one. And they held a really, let's put it this way. It was a very queer, but I thought actually very heartfelt and touching service for her at St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York. Hmm. But St. Patrick's that day was packed out with queer people and sex workers who were there to pay their respects to this person who had done so much to protect them, to advocate for them. And some of the quotes, and I would actually really, really recommend that your people in your audience go and listen and find some of the quotes, because the quotes are really beautiful. In fact, they're very, very Jesus-like. Like, the kinds of things that people were saying were about her was that they would say she was somebody who saw the unseen. She was somebody who hung out with the marginalized. She was somebody to whom those who don't matter mattered. Right. I mean, these are the kinds of ways that we want Christians to be seen. And to have that happening in this cathedral was this briefly, I mean, it's sad because we lost this really impressive person, but also sort of as a Christian trans woman, right? This was an encouraging thing that this could take place there. And St. Patrick's, we don't have time to get into it right now, but it has a history with queer people. So that was also something sort of nice about that. Except that 2 days later, under the orders of the Archdiocese of New York, the cathedral held a special mass to cleanse the cathedral of the taint left from the attendees, from some of the things that were said were deemed to have been blasphemous. And I've talked to some of my Catholic friends and some of my queer Catholic friends who say, you know, sort of are able to see both sides a little bit more, maybe than I was, because I was really upset. But
well,
I think...
Can we just call it out?
For sure, stop me.
Yeah, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I want to really just... I want to maybe say what needs to be said here, right? Because the obvious perception on its face, especially given the anti-trans nature of the Catholic Church and really of Christianity in general in America, right?
Yeah.
Of course, there are factions that are affirming, but they're not really in the popular cultural's eye or have a lot of power. So, right. So this thing happens. You said this person was trans and also advocated for sex workers, things like that, right? Things that Catholic leaders would say are not okay, ultimately.
Yeah.
So this thing happens, this person's eulogized at the church, and then there's a separate ceremony that's ordered from the hierarchy of the church to, even if maybe there's more context, but on the surface, looks like to cleanse the holy place of like all the uncleanliness that was in there prior.
Absolutely.
Right? That's the perception of what we have at the current moment.
It is. And as a, you know, theologian and scholar of the problems that are inherent with discussed theology, you can see that I had red lights flashing and warnings flashing all right. over the place, right?
Totally.
I mean, the language of you are filth, you are disgusting, there was plastered all over this, whether that was what the church intended or not. And I'll say that even if it wasn't what they intended, there were no helpful statements from the church saying, we are not saying that trans people are taint. They were just kind of, what happened was a disgrace and we need to do this cleansing.
Got it.
Mass. So that was heavy. And then the next Monday, I think, was it Monday or Tuesday that the news of Next Benedict hit? And I think we need to come back to that because that is still happening.
Yeah.
But since then, we've also had the development of, and in some ways, this is one of those, I don't want to call this good news. It's the first successful federal hate crimes trial for somebody they're being tried for a hate crime because they killed a trans person, right? For transphobic hate crime.
Wow.
And it was in South Carolina. A woman who's recorded in the press as Dime Doe was killed by her boyfriend when it got out that she was trans, and he then was apparently called the F-slur and in response got defensive and murdered her.
Wow.
And again, trans women of color, this happens a lot. It happens far, far too often. It's in the news far, far too often. But to have all of these all hitting the news within a 1 week span,
yeah,
it's a heavy time. It's a very heavy time. And in the background, all of this is, I think the last reported numbers I saw are that there are currently 400 bills in state houses across the country that are specifically targeting LGBTQ plus folks. And the vast majority of them are targeting trans people.
Hmm. This is important because, how do I say this? People who are part of certain communities that get overlooked oftentimes have to really look out for themselves and for their people, right?
Yeah.
And so I know folks like you and other folks that I talk to in the trans community who I really love and respect are really in the know of like things that I have never even heard about, right? Things that just go over my head that are not in the national news cycle, et cetera. So what I hear you saying is that, unfortunately, you're used to hearing these stories occasionally, but to have so many happen so quickly is just really difficult and really heavy to work through because there's so many of them. Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely it is. And I think in some ways there's something that makes it sort of harder in that you have this many happening in succession and you see a few of them sort of hitting, you know, reaching outside of that bubble of stuff that queer people read, but it doesn't break our algorithms, right? It doesn't break out of
exactly,
our algorithms.
Exactly.
And you start to think, okay, well, maybe they'll notice, right? Maybe the larger world will notice and see what's happening. And then when you don't see that happen as much as you think it should be, that sort of compounds the sense of being under siege, the sense that, you know, well, we're all alone in this. I think one maybe exception, and I don't want to be speaking too early, is that it seems like the story about Next, this is a really horrible story about Next, seems to be sticking. People are paying attention. They're continuing to see what's going on, and maybe something will happen from that one.
Yeah. Do you think it's picking up? Maybe a fair way to say it is, is the story is getting beyond the algorithms that we tend to find ourselves in, right? Like, you know, people who don't know about our work or your work are finding out about this story. It's on CNN right now, et cetera.
Yeah.
Do you think it's out there because this was a teenager, someone who was underage. This was someone who was in a school. This was someone who was beat up pretty severely, right? And then actually went home and then, after coming back from the hospital, you know, passed away. So do you think it's one of those things where all the factors just kind of align to be like, whoa, like how did this happen? And how did it happen in a public school? Do you think that's part of it or is there something else going on?
I think that's a big part of it. I do think some of the continued reporting over it probably stems from there's like that contested nature about the specific cause of Nex's death. And
yes.
That's worth talking about.
Sure.
And, you know, I'd like to talk about it. But before we do, I think another really big component of this in the civil rights legal arena, they often talk about looking for a sort of perfect victim. And sometimes you'll hear this in a negative context and sometimes in a more positive context, just in terms of trying to find a good strategy for getting legal rights breakthroughs or bringing the right case to the courts, right? One where the public is going to be sympathetic, one where there aren't extrinsic additional distracting factors, and you can really focus on the injustice that you want to have solved. And I think there's something very similar that plays in the news and plays when it comes to just kind of the media in general. There is a tendency to amplify when we have a potential perfect victim. And there's a lot of problems with that, right? The idea
totally.
That like all of these other people were not perfect. were less perfect. And so their deaths aren't being treated aren't getting the same amount of attention.
Right.
And at the same time, I think there's a sort of sense of like, well, if we can't get people to care about the death from bullying of a 16-year-old kid, how will we ever get anybody to care? Right. Like, what will ever make somebody care? And I think that's the sort of what we're playing with here.
Yeah, that's an important note, because you and I are both Christians, and a core value of the Christian tradition is that we believe every human is made in the image of God and every human is worthy of dignity and respect, et cetera. And so we can unintentionally, right, start treating some deaths as more valuable or worse or more tragic than others, when in reality, we lost several people just because of their identity, or their identity played a part in why they exactly lost their life, right? So just to give the audience up to speed when it comes to NEXT, I mean, the long and short that I understand, and Billy, please feel free to fill in any gaps, is that NEXT was a high school student. I've read from two different sources, they were non-binary, but they would use either they, them, or he, him pronouns. So I've seen NBC use he, him. I've seen CNN use they, them, just to be clear about that. And essentially, they got into a fight where I believe a few classmates who were girls, got into a fight in the bathroom, and they beat him until the point when he blacked out. He got up and was, I believe the video footage shows him being escorted back to the nurse's office. The nurse said, hey, he should probably go to the hospital at some point. He goes, I think later on that afternoon, there was no ambulance called. There's police footage of NEXT saying what happened and kind of saying, I've been being bullied for a long time. I believe NEXT says that he threw water on some of the girls because they got into some kind of argument. And that's when they really started beating him up. And then he gets released. And then the next day is found, you know, in a really bad physical state that eventually cost him his life. So the current gap as of this recording that seems to be ambiguous right now is that police said that in the initial autopsy report, they haven't gotten the full thing yet, they said that trauma was not the cause of death. But that seems to be kind of sus. I've also read some articles that police have walked that statement back. So it's just very confusing. And, you know, I do my best, and I know you do too, Billy, as someone who's an academic. We want to be data informed. We just don't know that gap. But regardless, right, we know that bullying was happening. We do know that NEXT was ganged up upon and was beat up. And we do know that shortly after being released from the hospital, they lost their life the following day. So there's a lot of things that at least seem very suspicious. And it seems like NEXT's gender identity played a role in that. Is that a fair assessment so far?
That's all a fair assessment.
Okay, so here's the other big part, though, about this, right? This happened in an Oklahoma school district. Yes. And this is really key, friends. Like, follow me here. Oklahoma, the school superintendent, his name is Ryan Walter. And he's, I think, in his mid-30s. He's like my age. I'm not sure how old you are, Billy, but I'm 35. And so he is over the whole school system in Oklahoma. And he's a raging Christian nationalist, has declared the war on woke, wants to ban certain books from the library. And I believe, and please fill in any gaps that I don't have here, but he made it impossible for students to change their gender identity on like their school files in order to fight back from, you know, the quote unquote trans agenda. So there are some layers happening here.
There are a lot of layers happening here. Yeah, so Oklahoma under him and under sort of a lot of the Republican legislature in Oklahoma has been incredibly inhospitable to trans people over the last few years, ever since they sort of decided to make us their I'll say whipping boys. But since they decided that trans and what they call gender ideology would be the new target in their culture war, Oklahoma's been pretty gung-ho about cranking back any kind of trans rights. And I can say, I put on my I am a public school teacher hat for a second, I can say that a lot of what's happening is that, so public school systems have a fair amount of leeway in how a student can be referred to and under what conditions they can be referred to that. So I'll use an example of a local school district in Maryland. I'm not going to name it because I don't want people getting hate.
Yeah.
But a local school district in Maryland where the policy is that a student can self-identify to the school district, and that once they do, there's a bit of a process they go through to kind of make sure that they're serious, but that carries through to, they can have their name changed in most of the school systems, except those systems that require, for whatever legal reason, a legal name, right? And that's the kind of, and that would be what we would think of as a trans-friendly sort of a policy, right? Like, that's about as positive as the school system has the power to do, because they have certain legal requirements. And so, for instance, what will show up on your diploma has to be what your legal name still is, right? That sort of thing where they can't change.
Sure.
But there are a lot of places where they can. And so what Ryan Walters is doing here is he is taking all of that space to accommodate trans kids away from the schools.
Yeah. Right?
He's saying you actually can't do that.
Okay. Yeah, that's helpful to know. And I want to really emphasize, I mean, this Ryan Walters is almost worth doing an entire piece on by himself, because some of the stuff that he says is truly shocking. And one part I want to highlight here briefly, I've noticed that, you know, sometimes I have a hard time seeing myself as like, as a peer to people like Ryan, right? I think, oh, Ryan's like he's an adult and I'm younger than him or something like that, right? But like folks like Ryan or Haya from Lips of TikTok, who we're going to dive into in a few minutes here, they're either my age or younger. You know, Charlie Kirk is 30, right? So this is our generation, my generation. And this is what happens, I believe, when you're steeped in like what is the conservative talk radio world of Rush Limbaugh, and you want to push it further, you go here. Right now, you're in another level of declaring all these wars, gaining seats of power, and then forcing people, especially marginalized folks, in this case, trans people, to adapt and to be forced into whatever this really rigid worldview is, because, quote unquote, the Bible. And for the record, it's shitty interpretation. I just want to put that out there. It's good interpretation. Right. So there's all that happening. And the result is that cultures are created in public school systems that become very hostile to non-binary or trans people. Oh, yeah. I think that's why this next story is so powerful, because it happened in a school district or run by a superintendent that's incredibly hostile to these types of people. And might we add now, Senator Tom Woods, who's an Oklahoma senator, right? Yeah, he was asked about this. And at first he says, well, it's always a tragedy, yada, yada, yada. And then he says, quote, I represent a constituency that doesn't want that filth in Oklahoma. That's a sitting senator talking about the queer community in the context of the death of a non-binary teenager.
The death. And he follows it up by justifying that using his, if I remember the quote correctly, Christian and moral values. It's not coming from nowhere, right? He is rooting his disgust.
Yes.
I can't help but notice it. But
he is
rooting his disgust for people like this dead child in his, quote, Christian and moral values.
Right.
And at this point, if you're a Christian, you have to either you're drinking the Kool-Aid or you should be really alarmed, right? That somebody is going to be citing Christian values for this sort of dehumanization of a dead child.
Right. Again, we ask ourselves, is there any line where the humanity breaks through for these people?
Yeah.
Right? Like, where's the line of, you know what? I get we have differences, but something really is wrong here. We have to address it. Not even the death of a teenager can happen without, again, this is not some random bro on Facebook with like 40 followers who's like, I'm a bigot. This is a sitting Oklahoma senator who has power to shape laws in Oklahoma. And he is so deeply bigoted that even publicly talking about the death of a non-binary child, His way of saying it politely is by calling them filth. Think about that, right? He knows he's on camera. He knows that like there's a certain decor you want to have as a politician, etc. And so his tamed down public version that people can hear is calling people filth. That's in the name of the Christian God, in the name of quote unquote biblical values, in the name of Jesus.
Right.
That should really alarm any moderate listening to this. I know I have a few of them who listen because they don't agree with me. That should really wake you up and make you ask yourself, what theology can lead to that statement after the death of a child just because they asked you to use different pronouns than maybe the ones that maybe the sex that they were assigned at birth, you know, so to speak. It is shocking to me.
Remember, he ended that interview or that session, I think he was answering a question with, we don't want them in this state.
Yeah.
We don't want them in this state. And I can't divorce that. I can't separate that in my mind from hearing Kaya Reichick over at Libs of TikTok describing Oklahoma as a very red state that is too woke. Let's combine those two things together. Sure. Woods is saying that, I mean, we know that woke is what they're calling us these days.
Totally.
Right? Us being the queer community, right?
Right, yeah.
That woke, we don't want them in us. He wants queerness out of his community, and in the context of a queer kid that is no longer in his community. Like, the context is this kid died. The people who most recently helped him achieve what he wanted were the people who led to Nex's death. And he's still able to say this, right? This is, I don't know where your guests are at this point on using the word. For me, this is full-on fascism. This is when we are seeing fascist exclusionary policies and actions. Remember that fascism starts by where the government is permissively allowing bigots to be violent to the unwanted categories in their society.
Friends, it's no secret that Christian nationalism is on the rise and threatens the rights of all of our neighbors. You also know I'm a big believer in shared values over shared beliefs, and you know that we are committed to working together with all kinds of folks to protect democracy in 2023. That's why I'm proud to let you know about the Summit for Religious Freedom hosted by Americans United taking place in Washington, D.C., April 14th through the 16th. I'm going to be there, and I'm so excited because keynote speakers include Anthea Butler, author of White Evangelical Racism, who we've had on the show before, and Representative Jamie Raskin, a vocal opponent of authoritarianism and Christian nationalism. The Summit for Religious Freedom is a big tent full of all kinds of people from different walks of life and holding different beliefs, uniting under the shared value of protecting the rights of all of our neighbors. So grab a ticket, let's hang out and learn all about the ways we can resist Christian nationalism and protect freedom for all. Go to thesrf.org for more information, and if you can't make it in person, that's okay. You can always grab a digital ticket and join us from virtually anywhere. Get it? That's thesrf.org, hosted by Americans United for Separation of Church and State, April 14th through the 16th. I'll see you there. Let's tie this to the theology discussed. Now, I'm assuming our audience hasn't heard our entire interview, but I don't want to recap the whole thing. Give the audience like the Cliff Note version of the intro, and then let's tie this into what we're seeing today. Because this is a really helpful layer that people, I don't think, get. They miss it because we're so stuck on the fearful part. That could be a part of this, but there's something deeper. Go for it.
Absolutely. And I think that's actually the perfect jumping off point for me.
Thank you.
We have, you do well with these things.
I try, Billy. I try.
Right? No, because we do. We focus so much on fear. And that's right. It's accurate. It's there. But disgust is the other sort of foot in this sort of horrible walk towards increasing fascism or increasing Christian nationalism. Because disgust, unlike fear, actually, is pre-rational, right? Disgust kicks in before we've had a chance to think about it. And the immediate reaction to feeling disgusted is to eject, to get the thing out of you. And again, it's always a little bit uncomfortable talking about disgust because I'm talking to an audience and I'm saying, now think about feeling disgusted, and nobody wants to feel that way.
I don't.
Right? Like when we're disgusted, the vomit, right? Like it is getting the thing, it has to get out of you.
I mean,
it has to be gotten rid of.
The joke I do with friends, at least I used to, is like you dry heave, right? When something's gross, right? Like, ugh, right? It's
right.
Like that's just, and it's supposed to be funny because it's like it's just understood.
Yeah, no, exactly. This is, right? And disgust is something that we don't feel quite the same as we about our disgust as we do towards as our fear. My brother would nuance me, so I'm going to nuance myself a little bit and say, I used to just like to say, we tend to be proud of our disgust, but we're ashamed of our fears. Like, we don't want to be cowards, but like, it's actually embarrassing if we are not disgusted by people in our social circle. So disgust also can spread that sense of disgust, that sense of being disgusted by a certain thing or person or group can spread by sort of social just contact. If my peers are all disgusted by something, it's embarrassing to me to not be disgusted by it. Oh, how can you stand that? How do you eat that? Right? How do you?
Totally.
How do you, right?
Think pineapple about that kind on of pizza, Billy. Pineapple on pizza, right? My audience knows. It's disgusting. It's abominable. Throw it in the trash. I don't want it anywhere near me. And now the new thing is I like 7-Eleven blueberry coffee. And I'm slowly converting people. Okay, like I'll have people come on that are friends of mine, people that the audience knows. I'll have them try blueberry coffee, and they're like, "It's so disgusting." But when they trust me, they convert. So yeah, so this I'm
there. You go. You're doing some.
Yeah, go ahead.
You're doing good. You contaminative work there, right? Undoing disgust by getting people to expand their view and allow something new in that they previously felt disgust for, but they're finding actually can integrate into them quite nicely.
I should become an academic. I obviously have the gusto for it. Clearly.
So the thing is that we take disgust as a personal reaction and we apply it onto what we call our social bodies, right? Mm-hmm. Our groups as we understand them. And this is where I see Senator Tom Woods' statement, especially the part where we, you know, that we don't want them in our community, as so incredibly both indicative and dangerous. Because what he's doing, and he talks about our community, our state, he's creating a social body, right? He's saying that we together are a group. We are a social body, and we need to eject that. As soon as he uses the term filth, together with the concept of a social body, he is creating the conditions for people to see or experience somebody who's queer and think that has to be got rid of right now. Or think is really the wrong word, to react as though that thing has to be got rid of right now, right?
Yeah.
Fear, a nice way to put it might be that, you know, where fear is the run away from it, possibly fight it if you have to, right? The fight, flight, freeze response. The disgust response is either vomit or kill it with fire, right? It's that, right. You know, that famously kill it with fire reaction, right?
Yes.
That's a disgust informed.
It's not redeemable.
Right. Yeah. It just needs to be got rid of.
Right.
And people can get horrifically creative in how to get rid of something that is infecting, and I put that in scare quotes, their social body.
Yeah.
And so this is a lot of the work I'm doing. And there's a lot of really good news stuff. My brother and I we're working on a book to talk about. We think this becomes actually a really terrible problem for Christian theology, because actually the gospel is good news. Like, this is, I am a deeply committed Christian. Yes. I believe that the gospel is actually supposed to be good news, and it should not be, the gospel should not be driving us to have disgust reactions towards people. The gospel should be driving us towards including people into our community, right? It's such a stark contrast to me between Jesus, who is literally touching lepers, people who are physically disgusting, and he's touching them.
Right.
He's doing what nobody else would do, right? Jesus, who is spending time with people who are socially not supposed to be part of the body, right? Jesus does not act as though people are disgusting.
Yeah.
He never does. And yet somehow we have somehow gotten to a Christianity that treats the ejection of people, even the pre-cognitive or pre-rational ejection of people, as obvious and is even now being justified as being Christian on the basis of Christian moral values. And it's crazy to me. But what the good news is that if you can turn this around and notice what Jesus is doing, what Jesus is telling us is that actually he says, what is in you is greater than, you know, is greater than the world. I have overcome the world, he says. Jesus says that actually the attitude we ought to have is that we contaminate the world for good. We should see ourselves as people, not who need to be afraid of being contaminated by whatever we might think is disgusting or even feel is disgusting or perceive as disgusting. We need to see that and experience that. And our response needs to be, I need to be there. I am called to be, you know, what's the phrase? It's, we're salt and light. I need to be there and let the Holy Spirit do the Holy Spirit's work. And that requires an incredible amount of faith.
Yeah. Right.
I'm being very evangelical today. But it does, right?
My poor audience is triggered. Like, you know,
I know, right?
Well, they probably have no category. Like, wait, a trans woman who's deeply evangelical and wants to bring him good news? Like, these things don't add up in my head.
Because this is the thing, right? I'm with you. I can't believe what's coming out of my mouth. I, too, spend most of my time in deconstruction spaces. I promise. Exactly. I have my bona fides.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Yeah, we definitely do, especially lately, right? I love it.
Right, but this is the thing, is that we should be able to enter into spaces, even when we're not sure, with the faith that, you know, if what is there is bad, then what is in me is more powerful and will overcome. Like, I don't need to be afraid of it. In fact, I can be good for it by my presence, by being as much like Christ as I can. And if it's actually good and I'm wrong, I got to trust that it is powerful enough to transform me.
Yeah.
Right? My brother writes about this very, very powerfully in one article that we published, where he tells the story of when I came out to him.
Mm.
And he talks about being unsettled, but then realizing that he needed to sit with this introduction of queerness into his life and let it transform him. And then he goes on to talk about all the beautiful ways that allowing that to integrate into the way he understands himself and our relationship and my relationship to his kids has made his life better, right? Has actually brought them closer to Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, listen, as a straight cis heteronormative man, so to speak, you know, I align much with what you just said about your brother, right? Because in the beginning of even this work, I was like, how do I navigate this? This is just a foreign concept to me, right? I mean, I didn't have a lot of trans folks in my life who I knew personally. So, you know, I also was like, okay, what do I do here? But the ethic for me personally, was always like, how do I love better? And also, more importantly, and this changed me, was how do I let people who are not like me love me better?
Right.
Right. And that actually shifted so much of how I see the world now. And it's just wonderful. Like, I love having these friendships with folks that are so different than me, because not only do I hope that I can just, you know, be an example of a straight white man who actually cares about those people, but more importantly, maybe arguably, is that they're also transforming me in so many ways without them even knowing it, which I just think is so powerful. So,
well, if you can let me, if you'll let me just puff you up for a second, you evangelicals.
This is not a paid endorsement, okay?
It's not a paid endorsement. This is on the fly. No, I think, in fact, again, speaking as a discussed scholar and as somebody who cares about undoing this, the new evangelicals' commitment to non-dehumanization is so critical to this whole process, because dehumanization, well, disgust automatically dehumanizes. So already by having a stated ethic that we do not dehumanize, you're protecting yourselves from falling into this kind of disgust that leads into these horrible directions that we've seen. Yeah. But the other thing that I noticed, and you were talking about, like committing to loving these people. And this is what's really beautiful on just the straightforward psychological level, is that intimacy decreases our disgust reaction. Love decreases our disgust reaction. The example my brother always likes to share is, he says, you know, human poop is one of the fundamental disgust things, but my kid's dirty diaper is less disgusting to me than your kid's dirty diaper is to
totally
me, right?
Totally.
And it's because love is present between me and my kid, and therefore them. I mean, the other, there's a million other options, right? Like, kissing is not disgusting for most of us, but it's really horrific. But swapping spit is horrifically disgusting with somebody that we don't like, right? Like, it's the difference becomes intimacy. It's love. It's the presence of love.
No, I love that. I think that's great. And friends, if you want more of a deep dive, and if you want to hear Billy's brother Paul also on the podcast, it's episode number 133. I honestly really recommend it. It happened. Almost a year ago now, in March was when we first talked, and it's such a good episode. So check that out. So we have this disgust thing now entering into our psyches, friends, as we're kind of navigating this, and that I think will give you some new lenses to understand the vitriol and the hate that we see being thrown at people who are not like the people who are trying to gatekeep these normative perceptions and this cultural, you know, idea of whatever they think America should or shouldn't be. To your point with that senator, right, saying we don't want them here. It's this idea of boundary keeping, almost like how your body is looking for bacteria to destroy or to expel, just like your human waste, right? Your body wants to get rid of that, so it does. And so, obviously, disgust as a human trait is life-saving when it comes to germs and, you know, all that stuff, right? When it comes to how we treat each other, it becomes poison. It becomes poison, and it really hurts us, especially when it's people who are just being who they are. Right? We're not talking about predators or people who are doing harm to other people. Of course, we all always acknowledge, right, that there's nuance and nothing is binary. But in this context, the language of disgust, I think, gives us a new set of categories to say, oh, I see what's driving that. It's not just fear. I mean, fear can be part of that, but it is it's this hatred. I mean, I'm not sure how else to say it, because I do see Matt Walsh's tweets still. I see what Lives at TikTok is posting still. And and fear is not the right word for it. They're not fearful. They are angry, and they feel like trans folks are disgusting and that they don't have a right to exist how they exist. I mean, that's Michael Knowles, right? We have to eradicate transgenderism. Eradicate is a very strong word that you use when you're talking about parasites on a farm. We have to eradicate the pests, the insects and the pests, right? That's what we talk about here. So I am with you all the way. I think that this way of thinking will help us give us new tools to really say, we know what this is. And that makes it all the more dangerous.
Yeah. No, I can't remember if it's Stanley or Echo who has one of the key pillars of fascism is that the enemy must be both strong and weak.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that use of fear and disgust at the same time is what allows for that to happen, right? Fear means that they're strong. Disgust means that they're weak. We mock them and we say they're gross. That's the disgust. We say they're a threat to us. They will contaminate. They will trans your kids. Right. That's the fear part, right?
Right.
That's how they play with both of them.
Right. So let's kind of combine some of these things. And this really culminates in Libs of TikTok. So Libs of TikTok is this massive Twitter X, whatever we're calling it, 2.9 million followers. I saw them a long time ago. No clue who ran it. Thought it was some professional, whatever. I think Haya is like 28 or 29. Like, she's young. It's a very young woman who runs this account. And the account essentially just highlights what they think are problematic things or people in the public school system and in culture, drawing attention to the trans people or to queer people who are grooming children, essentially. The account is really problematic for a lot of reasons. NBC did a news story linking bomb threats to posts that Libs of TikTok would do. Yep. Many people who are not public figures, and that's a key thing for me to say now, and you'll understand why in a second, get blown up on this account. Sometimes they get doxxed and death threats are sent their way. So it's problematic. And Haya did an interview with, is it Taylor Lorenz? Is that her name?
Taylor Lorenz, yes.
Okay. And honestly, friends, it is one of the worst interviews I've ever seen in my entire life. I don't want to dehumanize Haya here, right? To your point.
Right.
But I'll put it this way. It was a good example of how propaganda might look really powerful online, but once it's questioned, you realize it's hollow. There's nothing behind it. And this interview is an hour long. Me and Billy are actually going to take time out of our schedules and respond to the whole thing live on YouTube soon, because it's not even because we have to say much, right, Billy? It's just like, you need to watch how this person's asked real questions and has no answers, or gives like a Fox News, Tucker Carlson level retort of like, well, the immigrants are destroying the country. Like there's no substance underneath of it. So I say all this because, Billy, you actually were highlighted, I don't mean positively, by Libs of TikTok because you're a public school teacher. Can you share your story behind what actually happened to you?
Oh, gosh, yeah. No, I can. So I'm a trans woman. If you couldn't tell from my voice and the fact that I keep talking about myself as a woman, I think it comes through. I'm a trans woman. I came out fairly late in life. It was just at 3 years ago. And that I first came out privately and only a little over 2 years ago that I came out publicly and came out at work. And when I came out, it went all right for a few days, for a few months. It was really not bad. And then somebody sent a picture of me to Libs of TikTok. She featured me twice. I don't know if she knows that actually. No, she does. She featured me twice. The first time there was no name at first. She just shared a picture of me in my classroom with a Black Lives Matter flag behind me. And she captioned it, "This is a great ad for homeschooling." And
that was you?
That was me. I'm the great ad for homeschooling.
Wow. Jesus.
And somebody just lifted that off of one of my social media, personal social media accounts. Back then I was not particularly heavily engaged, with the greater internet culture. I think I posted it to just kind of let my friends know, hey, this is like my fourth or fifth day out at work and things are going pretty great. And here I am. Right. It was a sort of general thing.
So to be clear, you were not doing like public figure work. You weren't doing your, I think your account now on X is like, your name is writing, something like that, right? Like you're a writer, you're doing a book now. So that was not you when this happened. You were just a teacher. Like, hey, just friends, FYI, this is going great. And someone grabs that, Libs of TikTok. And by the way, Haya, who runs the account again, she calls herself like a journalist. Okay. So
yeah, that's going to be important in a second.
Totally. So her journalistic ethics are, oh, here's some random person's account that I don't like. Let me put them in front of my 1.5 or 2 million followers who all or mostly hate trans people and think that they're destroying the country. And let's see what happens, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And what happened was bomb threats. Not bomb threats. It was school shooting threats. It came out when she posted it. It was just around the time of the Buffalo, the Buffalo shooting. And I know that because several of the school shooting threats referenced the Buffalo shooting and said things like, the Buffalo shooting happened in the wrong place, should have been this school.
Oh, that my sort of God.
I had to report it to the, I mean, I spent 4 or 5 days reporting just social media stuff to my administrator saying, hey, there's a threat you need to be aware of. There's a threat you need to be aware of. There were personal threats made to me. And eventually, one person actually threatened me so, didn't cover her tracks well enough. And so extremely that she ended up a year later pleading guilty to a hate crime harassment charge against me for a threat that she sent me.
This was from the "This is a great ad for homeschooling" piece.
That was the follow on from that.
So that was only the first time then.
That was only the first time.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, did people dig up your address? Like, were you doxxed at all? Like anything like that?
So as soon as I saw it, I was savvy enough that once I saw where it was going, I did all the sort of at least basic stuff to cover my personal address and the rest of that.
Totally.
It didn't take too long though before, I think it was over the course of about a week, that somebody from my school district sort of noticed it, recognized me, and doxed the school, and then gave my name and, you know, and said, you know, the name of the school we were. And at that point, that combined with the fact of the school shooting threats would put the district on high alert. And, you know, there were especially queer kids at the school, I remember, were just terrified at that point for a couple of days.
What was the timeline from when Lives at TikTok posted that photo and made that stupid tweet to when all of this happened? Was it like within a few hours, a few days, weeks, months? Like how soon?
Within a week. It was within a week. Wow. And again, and I can say very specifically, the doxing was done on a share of the Libs of TikTok post. Benny Johnson shared.
Oh my God, Benny Johnson!
Yeah, not my favorite person, obviously.
Another person I could do a whole piece on. Oh my Absolutely. God, drives yeah. me nuts. Okay, I don't want to start ranting. It's not. This is a co-host kind of conversation. It's not about me monologuing. Okay, no, so I want the audience to grasp this.
Yeah.
Billy, you come out, you know, as a trans woman. Your school supports you. Yep. That's what I hear you say.
Oh, they were great.
They were great. Awesome. You post on just your Facebook channel or whatever it is, you know, with your few hundred followers. Hey, things are going great. This gets picked up, Lives at TikTok, explodes it. Within a week, you have personal death threats, one of which a person pled guilty, right, for.
Yep.
And
yep.
then the school's getting, you said, school shooting threats.
Yep.
And someone recognizes you. And they doxed the school publicly of like, oh, this is the school and this is the person.
Yep.
Okay. So right away, right? Nothing is safe anymore for the students, for your family. You have children. Is that correct?
I do have children.
For your children. So it's important for us to recognize the real world consequences of these kinds of accounts. All because you didn't even do anything immoral, right? It's not like so-and-so abuses child. It was... You have a Black Lives Matter flag behind you and you're a trans woman.
Yep.
Okay. Continue on.
That was the thing. Yeah. And I mean, I will say that was one of the harder times of my life. Jesus. Only followed by, you know, the next time Kaya came after me.
My name is Bruce Johnson, and I'm very privileged to be one of your new TNE board members. One of the most important tasks for a board member is to help ensure that TNE accomplishes our vitally important mission of providing space and community for all of us to explore faith and purpose outside the basement of fundamentalism. Years ago, I started cleaning out my own fundamentalist garage, aka deconstructing, and how I wish I would have had the support of a community during that process. I felt alone, fearful, and anxious. There was no room for questioning doctrine or beliefs, nor any acceptance of doubt, discouragement, and pain. When I found TNE, I found a rich soil to explore and grow my faith, ultimately helping me to become a more empathetic, purposeful, and authentic follower of Christ. I'm also genuinely excited to be supporting Project Amplify this year. As a monthly donor, I know that by giving to TNE, I'm giving to a cause that will make a difference in the lives of thousands of people. In addition, because TNE is radically transparent about finances, I'm confident that the money I give will be used wisely to support our mission. We have a lot planned for 2024, so please partner with me as a TNE monthly donor to help us grow our impact and influence.
Yeah, I mean, I remember talking to my kids about how, you know, people knowing my name doesn't mean they're safe people. You can't treat them. You have to have met them. Wow. If you don't recognize them, at that point, my oldest had a cell phone. I said, just call me, call your mama. Don't go with anybody who knows my name if you don't know them personally.
Holy
right? Like, because we just can't trust that they would be safe. We had, at one point, the school district actually asked for, I live in a slightly different place, you know, different district than where I taught. And they asked the local police to do, you know, additional sweeps around my house because they thought it had elevated to that level of potential threat.
How were you feeling? I mean, how fearful were you at this point?
I was terrified.
I'd be terrified, especially having kids. When you have kids, everything changes. it changes, right? And like it's not so much about you or your personal safety, like whatever, even though that's still a scary thing. The kids, mm-hmm. like you, I'm sure you think they don't deserve this. They didn't ask for this, right? And like there's got to be some weird sense of feeling guilty, even though you did nothing wrong, obviously. Yeah. Like it's just a weird dynamic.
It's a very weird dynamic. And again, I would ask, you know, if you're having trouble with this one, imagine what it's like to be eating dinner with your family and have police knocking on the door and to find out that they explain that they're there to keep you safe. And then having to turn around and figure out how to explain to your, at that time, 8-year-old child, why there were cops at the door.
Oh,
right. Like this is, it's rough.
Right.
But it blew over eventually. I mean, she has a short attention span and went through the summer. What happened though, is that seed, because the two are not unrelated, that seed of what she had done in the spring, there was now a core of people, of parents and just community people near my school who were very unhappy about my existence, right? Like they had been libs of TikTok radicalized against my presence at the school, right?
These this are is the acolytes, the sycophants.
Yeah, right. So these are people that weren't, well, actually some of them were in fact the woman who made the death threat, but most of them were not death threat level people, but they were people who were going to see what's on libs of TikTok and be convinced now that I am grooming their kids, right? Like that I am some horrible person. And it didn't help, although I'm really proud of the work that we did, it didn't help that I was the faculty advisor for the Gender and Sexuality Alliance at the school. I had been for 10 years without anything significant as a complaint.
So even before you transitioned, like this is just what you did.
Absolutely.
And no complaints. Or like the nothing beyond the ordinary school teacher complaint stuff.
Yeah, I mean, every so often,
of course,
a conservative parent would be upset that there is a gay straight alliance or in person. Right, we changed our mind to it being a gender sexuality alliance. Right. But beyond that, it really wasn't.
Oh my God! Right? Yeah, exactly. Right, like, so was this like the majority opinion, or was this like a small minority of parents who were just really like loud about it?
I would say that it's the minority who were really, really loud. I wouldn't say it was a small minority, though. If I had to guess, I would say there were probably about 30% of the families. It's a pretty conservative school area, like district right there. Not the whole district isn't, but the area that school is in, the neighborhood, is pretty conservative.
Okay, got it.
And if I had to put a number on it, I would guess probably about 30% of the kind of people were really upset. I mean, it got to the point that the school gave me a special parking place right under a light so that I could get safely from the car to school and not have to worry so much because they didn't want to risk an incident. It was, it was at that level, and, no specific thing happened. Some kids were a little bit, were jerks, but I'm a teacher. I know how to handle kids being jerks. That's not a
problem. Right, right.
But they started looking for ways to get rid of me, and they tried a couple of things that just kind of bounced off, and then in the fall, one of my GSA students, their parent confiscated their phone, and the student was part of our leadership for the GSA and found it was just club communication, right? Like we had the GSA at that point had a Discord server and we had back and forth between me and our leadership, the club leadership, talking about, I think just they ran the social media stuff, but they would ask me like, what should we do with this situation? What should we do about that? And I would try to offer them advice. And it's really ironic to me now the way all it went, because at the time my whole advice was always be positive, show that we are following school rules, right? That was always like, find ways to be positive. We support queer people. We want people to not be bullied. And we support, and what we're doing is in line with school rules. But I had goofed and I had not gotten permission to communicate with students via the student group, I should say. It was a group chat thing via Instagram Messenger. I was supposed to use school email. I had used Instagram Messenger.
Got it.
I'm going to say right now, the school went back and looked at the contents of everything that was ever said. And they said, no, it was actually totally fine. Nothing horrible was said.
You just broke a policy. Like the school policy was for any teacher, don't Instagram your students, and you did.
Right. And again, I don't Instagram individual students. They had a GSA Instagram account, and I would Instagram the account with like, hey, maybe put this up or
that
kind of a thing.
Got it.
They used that to report me, which was enough. I mean, again, it wasn't an infraction, so they opened an investigation.
Sure.
And they followed that up with a bunch of fake accusations. And that was that. So to the point that there were enough false accusations that got me pulled from the school for the sake of the investigation, during the investigation. And that was, if I had to say, like, worst time in my life since I came out, that was a horrible time.
Mm.
Because the school was doing an investigation. I wasn't allowed to talk about it because those are the rules. Why there's an investigation. People were assuming the worst. And that's when somebody finally managed to get all of this to libs of TikTok, who wrote a whole story about it.
Yeah.
Published it on her Substack.
Yeah.
And I want to say at this point, we were talking about, she calls herself a journalist.
Yeah.
I can tell you right now, she never reached out to me for comment.
Mm.
And I mean, I'm not, I didn't go to journalism school, but I'm pretty sure there's ethics involved in that one. It was reshared by a couple of other anti-trans sites that follow them and just sort of use Libs of TikTok as kind of reporting service. And so not being able to respond to that, because again, I was following the rules, they weren't, was tough. Yeah.
So I have the article here actually, because you sent it to me. I asked you if you can pick it up. So Libs of TikTok posts this thing November 2nd, 2022. It's a video of two students with their faces blurred out, like laying on top of each other. And then the caption is, and let me just preface, because the audience can't see this until I post this to YouTube. The video footage is literally two students, faces blurred out, one's laying on top of someone else, like in a cuddly position, and the person's just like gently touching their arm. I went to a small private Christian school of 60 students. This was not uncommon for girls to do. And the guys were pretty friendly too. I just want to put this out there. So keep in mind, this is a very like G+ rated like situation here. It's probably during a free study hour or something. A student's laying down on top of them. And they're just like there. It happens in my private Christian school all the time. Here's the caption. This disturbing footage is reportedly from a classroom. The classroom is a designated LGBTQ+ safe space run by a transgender teacher where students can come whenever they want throughout the day to hang out. More on this shortly. Okay, I just want to point something out. There is the video, and the only thing that does not add up here is this disturbing footage. The footage is not disturbing at all. And also, like, why is it notable to say that there's a classroom designated an LGBTQ+ safe space that students can come whenever they want throughout the day to hang out? Like, what is so problematic about that? I don't I can't believe it. The school's making space for students who might need a place to let their hair down and relax. Oh, shocker alert. So this gets blown up on the Libs of TikTok account, and then you're back in the cycle.
And I want to say, I actually agree with you with what you said. And also, it's not true. I mean, this is a thing that happens a lot when you want to try to stigmatize somebody, right? Like, they have a video of two kids maybe making out. Like, there's sort of there's a posture thing going on here, and they use that, like, it substantiates, like, there were kids making out. I don't know. And they use that, and then they say, and here's all the context for it, and they make up the context for it, right? Like, this is all not true. They're saying this is horrible, and you look at it and you're like, well, there's something happening, so I guess, and this is a video evidence, so I guess this is all, everything that they say there is true, which is not.
So what's not true about this then? Like, give me the backstory. Is this not your classroom or something? Like, what's actually going on here?
From what I can tell, and I've watched it a couple of times, it's not my favorite thing. Obviously, it's not my favorite place to spend a lot of time.
Fair enough.
From what I can tell, it's our school.
Okay. Right?
Like, that is the school that I taught at. It's not a thing that I saw happening in my classroom, so we weren't always in our classrooms. Like, there were days that I took as a Sunday. I don't know, right? Like, this is like, I'm not in it. I don't know what's happening. They just have a video.
Can I interrupt you for a second? Do I have permission? I'm getting passionate now, Billy. You're getting me fired up because you're totally right. I will tell you again, let's go back to my small, tiny ass private school of 60 kids. Right. I know for a fact before I got to that school, there were stories about students having sex in the bathroom. This is a small private Christian school.
Yep.
Okay. And by the way, the video that's on this Libs of TikTok account, I can't even tell if they're making out. I just see I just can't freaking tell. Okay. But my point is that, like, even if they were, this is pretty typical high school shit. Like, it's very much a common thing in Christian school, in public school, et cetera. Right. And so this is such a, what makes this infuriating to me is, like, this happens all the time. To the point where we as adults brag about what we got away with at youth group or in high school, right? Like, I've heard stories. I'm just saying, like, maybe this is TMI, but I have stories from my old private school of like, when I was dating this person, they gave me a hand job on the way back from the school bus in the back row. I'm like, I'm just saying, right?
No, these are the stories that go around school. This is what teenagers
do. But it's weaponized to then attack you.
Yep.
Right. It's weaponized to attack you and your identity and who you are as a trans woman to tie in that disgust theology. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. I can't believe this is happening. This is disgusting. Even though the video is actually quite normative.
Right.
Anyway.
And that's right. And this is the thing is it makes it less safe for teachers to have safe spaces for queer students, which is really tragic. Right. This is the real, like, the, This is where this becomes dangerous. I mean, obviously, for people beyond me, it was pretty horrible for me right there in the moment.
Oh, of course, right, of course,
but
of course.
Like, yes. I had a classroom. It was where the GSA met. And during free periods, if I also was free, students were able to come. We didn't just let kids wander in randomly, right? Like, students were able to sit in there to find some space from being bullied or being harassed during my free period or their free period, during like study hall type times, right? It was a structured, allowed thing. But again, when they present it the way they do, I think a lot of I don't know if it's goal, but certainly effect, and I don't think it's an effect they're upset with, is to make teachers suddenly afraid of actually providing safe spaces for students who desperately need it.
Yes. I completely agree. I read this whole article. There is nothing in here that is like shocking. Honestly, like if this was reported on CNN, I'd be like, this is a boring story. Like there's nothing here, right? And so, and again, we're going to do a full live watch through of Haya's interview because I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be mean here, Billy. You know, I really try and like see the best in people, but
it's hard. The
interview, it almost feels like, is this AI generated? Right? Like if you typed in journalist owns lives of TikTok so bad that you think it's fake, they would generate this video. What is shocking about it is that Haya has only doubled down on Twitter. Mm-hmm. She calls Taylor, who interviewed her, a lizard person, which again, it is a very anti-intellectual approach. And I think it really exposes, and I cannot wait to do this with you because it's going to be so good. But when the audience watches or listens to it, they'll see how underneath this is not thoughtfulness or like trying to understand, or even God forbid, right? People who have thought through it, have a different perspective on some of these things that could be complicated regarding like, how do we navigate these boundaries? Okay. I get that there's work there's always room to debate in good faith, but this is not that. This is not that, right? There is no substance here. There is no sense of integrity. There's no sense of honesty, of humanizing. There's no sense of trying to understand. And the interview shows that shockingly well, right?
Oh my God.
Shockingly. And what's so surprising is watching, I just saw it today, Charlie Kirk retweets a segment of it and is like, oh, Haya owned this journalist. And you're like, dude, how do you see this video? How do you see this video and then think, oh, this will further my cause by sharing this excerpt? That is, it's horrible. We will be doing that, friends. Buckle up. It's coming out. We're going to work on it because there's so much to talk about just with that interview in and of itself.
It's true. And actually giving some context on for some of the things that she tries to say. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Just to finish the story. Eventually, the school district finished their investigation and said, oh, yeah, no, essentially, this is a nothing burger, plus a bunch of fake accusations. It took them a while to track all of those down. So in the end, they said, we don't think it's safe to send Mrs. Horde back to that school. Mm. And they, like, saying for my safety is an interesting, like, they decided that it wouldn't be safe to have me at that school anymore, and they put me to a different school, which was a fine school. I did really well there, actually. I really loved the people that I met there. But yeah, so that was the story. It was a lot. It was hard. I lost colleagues that I'd worked with for 10 years. And I built the institution. I had been the AP World History teacher there for a decade. I built that program. I was proud of it. You know, all of that stuff, that the institutional loss was real.
Wow. Well, I mean, a year ago, I'm going to just put my cards on the table because you know where I'm going with this, right? I mean, someone sent me that story. I didn't know you. And I was like, and it wasn't from Lives of TikTok directly. It was some other website. And the way it was framed, I was like, oh no, like, is there something that I don't know about with this person that I'm going to platform on my account? I remember, right, I think I audio messaged you. And I was like, I am so sorry to even have to ask this, but I got this information. Like, what am I missing? And you were super gracious with me. But that just goes to show how effective this propaganda can be, right? Where even people who want to be on the side of trans rights and want to platform those voices and want to be friends with people like yourself, you know, we see this and I'm like, am I missing something? What happened? So this stuff is powerful. And for Haya and for Lives of TikTok, I think it's just like, oh, well, that's just what I do. Like, it's fine. Yeah. It's no big deal. Like, I'm not actually ruining people's lives. And She is. Like, she absolutely is. And people are suffering. Bomb threats are happening. Kids feel like they're not safe. Teachers feel like they're under threat. You lost your decade of building up this AP history course and having colleagues and also having a relationship with students. That's gone because this person used their platform to spread absolute bullshit about you.
And this is the thing, right? Is that I'm one of the lucky ones, right? Yeah. Like, there are so many teachers who were the safe person in their school for queer kids who are gone because of Libs of TikTok and because they weren't in districts that had as strong a set of inclusion and protection policies, right? Wow. If you were, I live in a blue state. I live in a very blue state, right? Same. If I was living in a red state, I'd have been fired just because, like, we can't have a publicly queer teacher who has been featured by Libs of TikTok.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? This is the thing. I faced all of that. And I'm one of the lucky ones. And that's, I think, really important to understand when it comes to Libs of TikTok.
So, audience, I want to prepare you for what I'm going to say next. You might, if you're driving, just remember, don't drive off the road when I tell you this. So, Libs of TikTok creator, Haya, who is, I think, 28 or 29. She's young. She has no educational background. She has no educational training at all. Ryan Walters, the superintendent of Oklahoma School District, has brought her on to be part of a library council to advise what books should be and shouldn't be allowed in the public school library system.
Yep.
I'm not exaggerating. I'm not lying. This is a true story. Like, fact checked, true. Haya has no business. She doesn't live in Oklahoma. She's not part of the school system. She has no business being on that board. But because Ryan thinks that she's fighting the quote unquote woke agenda or the trans agenda, whatever, the grooming kids agenda, he brings her on to actually help shape what books are and aren't allowed for students to read. Not professional educators, not people like yourself, Billy, who have spent decades in the public school system, know how it works, know how the students can best learn, who also, might I add, who are passionate about teaching students. No, not those people. A social media influencer with 3 million followers who draws her mob crowd to call in death threats, to call in bomb threats, to call in school shooting threats, to make schools less safe for people that they deem disgusting.
And one of the schools was an Oklahoma schools before he hired Kaya. Like, he hired a woman who was responsible for a bombing threat that had been called into one of the schools that he was responsible for. It is
incredible. Unreal. And to bring this first full circle, this is Christian nationalism.
Yeah.
Right. We use that term a lot. David Gushy says authoritarian reactionary Christianity, also a good term. Same idea, right? But these are the elements of what we're seeing in these hyper fundamentalist militant evangelical spaces. Yeah. It's not about seeking the good of all their neighbors. It's about seeking the good of themselves and their power. And really, again, like, it's not a very thoughtful or intellectual approach. There is nothing intellectual or thoughtful about bringing on Kaya or Haya. I've heard him pronounced four different ways. Yeah. You know, but there's nothing intellectual or thoughtful about bringing her on to the Oklahoma School Board to think of, or the library council that Ryan's developing to shape what books are and aren't allowed. And you know what that means. What they're talking about is not just sex ed books, because sex ed books that show pictures of sex have been around for a long time. Right? It's because there are sex ed books that show pictures of queer sex.
Yep.
That now this is grooming, right? Yep. Oh, God forbid a 14-year-old gay teenager sees themselves represented in a sex educational book. That's not porn, by the way. That's educational.
It's educational.
Exactly. I know. Right? Like, sex is a normal biological function. It is human. And we should be teaching people how to engage in that in safe ways. Consent, how things work, how body parts work. So I'll tell you right now, Billy, the church ain't doing it. We know that for a fact. I mean, you and I both know that shit, right? And we know that statistically, the average age that someone sees porn is like age 9 or 10. Now, that's a problem in and of itself, but you do not want that. You don't want kids learning from porn how to have sex for a lot of reasons, right? So all of this stuff fits together, friends. It all is interconnected, even if on the surface it seems like it's siloed. And the result, the fruit, is death, right? Yeah. In the case of Next and the other people that you mentioned, The fruit is fear. It's disgust. It's othering. It's dehumanization. All things that we as Christ followers need to take very firm stands against, you know, in the sense of we have to rehumanize the conversation. We have to be able to say, no, this is a boundary you cannot cross. I mean, when Jesus says liberate the oppressed or, you know, that kind of thing, that's what I think about. Like, we have an obligation to do all we can to stand with those who are being marginalized and say,
yes,
absolutely not. You know, and I really encourage, especially if you're a white cis person, to really get loud on social media. Because, I mean, I don't want to speak for you, Billy, but my impression from my friends in this space are like, they need those voices more than ever to also be loud with folks like yourself and other friends that I've met.
In fact, amen to everything you said. And I want to push a little bit even further into
please.
In the sense of saying, okay, if you're listening to this and you are, you know, cis and straight and you have kids and you don't know yet whether or not your kids are queer, right? And you might be thinking, you know, I know how to do sex ed. I've been listening to like a lot of really great progressive Christian voices. And I know to have like, we're not going to have one 100-minute conversation. We're going to have 101-minute conversations. Yeah, like, right. You know all this stuff. You're prepped. Do you know how to do sex ed if it turns out your kid is gay? Mm. Do you feel prepared for that? This is the thing, is that most queer kids are raised by straight parents. Mm. And straight parents might be terrific. I'll give you all the benefit of the doubt that you'll do an amazing job at sex ed for your kids.
Yeah.
Although enough of us think that like maybe we should have a general thing because like you might do a great job, but how well do you think your neighbors are going to do at the sex ed for their kids? So like maybe let's just put it in the public schools to make sure everybody gets it. Right. But are you prepared if your kid is queer? Do you want, if it turns out that your kid is queer? And like, by the way, queer kids are an absolute blessing. They are a blessing from God. They are brilliant lights. And especially when they're supported, oh, they shine in these beautiful ways. But if your kid is queer, don't you want them to have the information that they need, even if it's not at your fingertips? This is why we need public schools to include queer sex ed, queer explanations of safe sex in their sex ed curriculums. Like this, it's not just a matter of, ooh, gross and the stigmatizing and the other, which is all there. And it's what Chaya Raichik and the rest of them are playing on.
Yeah.
But it's an active threat to our community. If safe sex, knowledge about safe sex and sex ed is being withheld from us as it pertains to our community. Mm. Right. And again, the AIDS crisis is looming over all of this, right? Like information not being given that the government needed to give that led to, you know, it led to horrific death and far more than needed to happen.
100%. Billy, it was great getting you back on the pod. We're going to come back hopefully in a few weeks here and do a TNE response type of video going through that whole interview. It will be something to behold, friends. I guarantee you, you've seen or heard nothing like it. Like that is a promise I can make good on. So Billy, it was great having you. We'll talk again soon. And thanks for sharing your story. Honestly, thank you for being willing to share that. And I think it will hopefully help reinforce people listening why it matters more than ever that we are loud about queer rights and trans rights and that we understand what's actually going on out there. So thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
You got it.